podcast uses profanity and topics may be disturbing for some listeners. Listen at your own risk. Welcome back to Hell and Heels Podcast. I'm Bryce.
I'm Amanda.
And hello.
Hi.
Howday. How are you?
Bryce, it's been I feel like it's, you know what? We have not talked much this week. And so I feel like we have both had a hellacious week, possibly. Okay, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, oh, yes.
Yeah, that's how I know, like, because at first I felt bad because I was thinking about it because we texted earlier today and we were like recording today. Yeah. Or last night or something. I think it was like 10 o'clock last night. I don't know. When did you text me?
I texted you, like, I think on Friday and been like, hey, by the way, are we recording on Sunday?
Okay, yeah.
We kind of need to.
It was Friday then. And I was like, you know, we haven't talked in a while. And I was like, that's probably fine. She probably had a bad week too. And that's what, it was just a long week.
It was such a long week. And my week's not, my next 2 weeks are going to be just as long. And I already know it.
I don't, hopefully mine's not, but I know. So James's car is in the shop. And as of right now, it's been in the shop 2 weeks. Something like that. His car's been in the shop like 2 weeks or something like that. Which
again, wait, hold on. Wasn't his car just in the shop like a month ago? I swear to God, you guys can't. You guys are the shop's best customers.
I mean, probably, but that guy is like great. And this is like a fluke because he's had it for 2 weeks. He thinks he knows what's wrong with it. But, like, we had that snow, and honestly, it was mainly ice come back through, so everywhere was closed. And then after that, he was sick, and so we're like, you know, he's a great mechanic, so that's fine. He thinks he knows what's wrong with it, but we're still waiting to hear back. So we don't know how long he's going to have it. Okay. At this point, we don't even know what's wrong with it. It's either, like, a catalytic converter or a dirty oil through the system kind of thing, like, oh, possibly a new engine.
You guys don't want to do another new engine.
No, but we've already looked, like, researched it. His engine's going to be so much cheaper than mine because my engine has a turbo in it. Why? Oh. I don't know. I don't need that. It's a tin can of an SUV. Why would you put a turbo in it? But whatever. So that
you can go turbo on your,
on my way to Walmart.
I was going to say on your daycare runs, but I forgot the word for daycare for a second. So I had to think, okay.
Yeah, it's been a long way. So there's that. And it's like, it's not bad for me. Like, yeah, it sucks being awake from like 4:30 in the morning to like 10 or 11 at night. That's not my favorite thing in the world, but I can get over it. It's just really hard on the kids. Annie's chaotic. So she thrives in chaos. Okay. The girl is like, just, she's a ride or die. She's like, let's go. Or she's a ride or ride. Like, even if you're not going, she's going. So she's fine. But Lee is, I told his pediatrician, he came out of my womb with a planner and a schedule because that boy, yeah, if he does not have a bottle and smell dinner by 6 o'clock, he's hit. And James gets off work at 6 o'clock. So.
And James does the cooking. So he better figure that out quick. Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know. I cook tonight. I can cook sometimes. And I cooked tonight and it was freaking delicious. Not to toot my own horn or anything.
I feel like you're tooting. Your horn.
Oh, I'm absolutely tooting my horn right now because it was really good. I made like a soy glazed salmon with sesame rice and green beans. Oh, so good.
Wow, you're just so fancy.
I am. It was all the air fryer. Honestly, it did most of the work. Oh my God, yeah. I didn't even use, the only thing I used the stove for was to toast the sesame seeds. Because I used the air fryer, the microwave for the green beans, and the rice cooker. So, very mom-friendly meal there.
Listen, I prefer not to cook, but I have to.
That's how I cook to survive. I don't cook for joy, which James does, so. That's why he does most of the cooking, because he enjoys it, so he's good at it. And I just put food in mouth.
Yeah. But I mean, that's the best thing anyone could do, right?
I mean, I think so.
I mean, I can agree with that, but I also am the one that does the cooking in my house, so, you know.
That's what I was going to say. You can agree with that, but you do the majority of the cooking.
Which is somewhat unfortunate.
So, how was your week?
It was busy. It was hectic. I will say, though, we had a pretty good night last night. I don't know if you've ever, because, guys, I'm on a Fablehaven kick. We're going back to Fablehaven. Okay. So there was the author Brandon Mull released a new book, or he's releasing a new book. And since he's from Utah, he's local to Utah, he was doing a launch party. And we went to the launch party last night. We took the boys and all that stuff. And most of it was like a little comedy show. I think if the boys were older, they would have thought it was hilarious, but obviously they don't know what's going on. It was pretty fun. We did leave early, so we didn't get a signed copy of the book, but we did get a copy of the book.
Okay, cool.
Well, I tried to get a pre-signed one, but Cody got off of work late, and so by the time we got there, all the pre-signed ones were gone, so.
Cody's fault. That's fine.
Yeah, it's for sure Cody's fault. But it was fun. We got to go to the launch, and I mean, we'll do it again if you release it. I'm sure he'll release another book, let's be honest.
So, I'm glad you got to go, because I remember you being excited about it.
Yes, I was very excited. So when I wasn't sure if we were going, because Cody got off late. He was supposed to get off at 3 and didn't get off until like 4:30.
Oh, wow.
So like we were pushing it. I was stressed. But yeah, it was fun. They did some skit. Like it was just like a comedy thing. It was just meant to be goofy, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, it's the book is more aimed towards children. So, you know, children were there and laughing, and it was funny. But that was a lot of fun. That was the highlight, I think. I feel like there was something else I was going to tell you about Mill, but she's kind of been a brat lately, and she doesn't. Don't you embarrassing stories. Well, you want me to talk about you, but you haven't told me what to say. All I get are these stories.
So it's left up to you, your discretion.
Yes. Yes. With that being said, little turd munch, we've gotten approval from my dad for her to join an episode, a full episode. I know she doesn't listen to all of them, but she's gotten approval. So y'all have something to look forward to.
I'm very excited because we already know what we're doing. Y'all will have to wait, but
hold on. I got to tell Cody because he's looking at me like, what the hell? She can join, but I can't. He's still offended. It doesn't matter. Anyways.
He'll get over it. Or not. Fine. I don't care.
That's fine. Looking at the boys, trying to think if there's anything. They're just eating. They're so aggressive when they eat. It's kind of scary. Oh, I know what it was I was going to tell you. It had to do with my dad. I knew I was forgetting something.
Okay.
It made me laugh. And I was very proud of JJ. He needs to do it again. So Friday, my dad came home. Whatever. He's holding JJ. And me and my mom are in the other room, and all we hear is my dad yell, "Oh!" and then something about, you know, whatever. We go in, and he's like, "JJ bit me!" I was like, "Good job, JJ, good job."
Atta boy.
And he has a tooth now. He has a tooth.
So he full on bit him.
My dad says he didn't, but he yelled, "Ow."
Okay.
My dad's like, I could feel him, and I was like, so he bit you. No,
yeah,
he was
like he
going to, but you yelled out.
Sounds like he got bitted.
It does. It sounds like he got bit. So I just thought it was hilarious. I approve. JJ, please, please do it again to Grandpa. He's practicing.
Grandpa, I love it.
Yeah. So. Sorry. Both children have now thrown their bowls off their high chairs.
Oh, okay.
It's fine. But I think that's all my updates. I'm real tired. That's all I know is I'm real tired.
Yeah, I'm ready for this week to be over, and it's Sunday. So
who said the week had to start? I'm sick. So okay, well, do you have any other updates or shall we get on to socials?
No, I think that's it. Let's get on with it.
Okay. So we do have these things called social media accounts, however you want to say. We've got Instagram, Helen Hills Podcast, X Helen Hills Pod, Facebook, just search Helen Hills Podcast. We've got all the things. Now, if you want to see pictures, go to Facebook or Instagram. We do reference all of our pictures, or we do post all of our pictures that we reference on there. We also have our Discord up, so if you guys want to join. We're not super talkative this week, so I'm so sorry to anyone that joined this week and I said hi and then left the conversation abruptly because I was busy. Damn it. So anyways, if you guys want to join us on Discord, you can certainly do that. And then if you have any suggestions, comments, whatever it is, you can email us at hellonheelspodcast@gmail.com. And then are you ready for a story?
Yes. I'm very ready.
Okay. Because this one kind of blew my mind, but it'll blow your mind too. It's fine.
Oh, okay.
Now, I did go much more lighthearted than what Amanda did. Significantly more lighthearted. So keep that in mind for my next story. Anyways, today, and I will say I found this case on TikTok. And then I was like, this isn't real. There's no way this is real. And it was real.
I love when that happens. And I also hate when that happens.
Yes. So we're going to be talking about Victoria Helen McCrae Duncan. I'm going to refer to her as Helen Duncan.
Okay.
Her just given name at birth is Victoria Helen McCrae Duncan. She was born November 25th, 1897 in Callander, Scotland. She was described as a rebellious child, often claiming to see spirits and experience unexplained visions.
Ooh, okay.
She would even give her classmates these dire prophecies, which I don't think made her super popular, because if I were a kid, that would traumatize me if this random kid came up and said, you're going to die next week in a terrible accident. Shut up.
I would love hearing her tell other people, but when it came to me, I'd be like, Helen, shut up. I don't want to know.
Tell me more about Karen. I want to know what's going to happen to her next week under that bridge that you said with the troll, okay? Anyways. So, yeah, she, I mean, just think about, like, eating lunch and your classmate's like, I had a vision. Something bad's coming.
We had a deal. Helen.
Helen has, she makes no deals. But Helen. Yeah,
I can see why she may not have many friends.
Yeah. And it's not that she was, like, bullied that I could find. I just am making the assumption that she didn't have many friends, okay?
I wouldn't bully that kid.
Hell no. Oh. The next prophecy's about me, and it's brutal.
Exactly.
Either that, or she's like, no prophecies about you. I don't share your prophecies, which is then even more nerve-wracking. Like,
Oh my god, yeah.
Did you? Yeah. See?
Okay, yeah. Not picking on that girl. We would be best friends. Me and her.
You're like, Helen, girl, where you been? Well, Helen was raised in a strict Presbyterian household where her mother strongly disapproved of her so-called abilities. Like, those are not a thing, Helen. Quit with the imagination. You don't have them. Some sources say that Helen left school early, though it kind of differs on where you look. And it says she took a job at Dundee Royal Infirmary. In 1916, she married Henry Duncan, a cabinet maker, and a wounded war veteran. Did you have a question? You kind of looked, like, weird.
I was just going to say, like, for someone who dropped out of school, that's a pretty good, seems like a pretty good job.
She was probably doing, like, CNA-type work, where it was, like, cleaning up bedpans, and yeah. You know, she wasn't doing the nurse type of stuff. She was doing kind of the busy work.
But, yeah, which, like, all that, I'm sure it sucks. But, like, it's not the worst, you know? Like, she's not a seamstress or something. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Do you see what I'm trying to say here? Because I'm just taking that shovel and digging.
Go on and keep it digging. In 1916, she marries Henry Duncan. He's a cabinet maker and a wounded war veteran. Unlike Helen's mother, though, Henry supports her claims of her paranormal abilities.
Hell yeah, Henry.
Even though he knows that most people believe she's a fraud. So
hell
together,
yeah, Henry.
Yeah, good for you, Henry. So together, Helen and Henry, they have 6 children, which we all know.
Whoa.
Far too many.
Yeah. Stop. Yeah, he did support her. He was like, supported her a little less.
We really support each other here, okay? Now, alongside her other jobs, she also worked part-time in a bleach factory. Now, I will say it's unclear whether she continued working at the infirmary after having children, or if, you know, being a mother was her primary job. That's unclear. But either way, she has a lot. She has six freaking children. Yeah. That's a lot.
With six kids, I'm surprised she has a part-time job. I would give up in life.
I quit. We're done.
No.
Look,
no.
I've got two, and I'm ready to be done. So Helen, she's been clairvoyant this whole time, but in 1926, she transitions into a physical mediumship. So at this time, we'll talk about it. Okay. At this time, spiritualism is just booming. So a lot of people sought out mediums who could connect with their, you know, lost loved ones, especially because this is after World War I. So Helen, she begins offering seances, claiming that she could materialize spirits by emitting ectoplasm from her mouth.
Gross.
So real gross. And this actually made her widely popular, but also wildly controversial.
Yeah, I feel like this was very on brand for the spiritualism time. Like, mm-hmm. everybody had ectoplasm coming out of something.
Yes.
And it just felt unnecessary, guys.
You know what? She did it. She done did it. Now, Helen, she wasn't just considered this, you know, traveling medium, but she was actually accepted as a minister in a network of spiritualist churches and private homes. So, like, okay. she's real deep in there.
All right. She's doing the thing.
Yeah. And this often gives her credibility among the spiritualist believers, and it makes her one of the more well-known spiritualists in Britain at the time. Now, skeptics accuse her of fraud, but she keeps going. She builds this loyal following, and they fiercely defend her. They're like, no, don't you talk about our Helen like that. She'll put a curse on Karen.
I've seen the ectoplasm, okay? I've touched it. I have wiped it from her mouth. It's real.
It's real. Okay, it's there. In 1928, Harvey Metcalf, a photographer, attended one of Helen's seances. He was curious about her abilities, and he decided to take some flash photographs while she allegedly materialized spirit. Okay. Now, what did those photos reveal? Possibly that Helen was a little bit of a fraud. That's what that revealed. So instead of materializing actual spirits, the photo showed that she was using dolls made from paper mache and an old sheet. And the picture I actually don't know if I put the picture in. I meant to put a picture in of the creepy dolls. They're not fun, I'll tell you that much. Let me find it. I didn't put it in. There she is. Hold on. Okay, so that's been added now. So there is now a picture you can reference.
Was this a standard doll of the time, or did she just pick the worst one from the penny store?
She made it. How I understand is she made it.
In whose likeness? Because ain't no one got a snoz like that. The nose on this doll?
I don't know. What? I don't know.
Why?
It's something else, okay?
I hate it so much.
Okay. So, people are now questioning her more, because that's not a spirit. That's a creepy doll. In 1931, the London Spiritualist Alliance, or the LSA, conducted an official investigation into Helen's methods, and they found her so-called ectoplasm was not ectoplasm at all. It was cheesecloth, paper mixed with egg whites, and toilet paper.
Oh. Wait, how did she...
I'm going into it.
Bryce.
So investigators would find that Helen would swallow and regurgitate this mixture.
Absolutely not. That's not safe.
She was doing this to make it appear like it was coming from the spirit world. So the LSA, to test this theory, they asked her to swallow a blue tablet. Because once that got in her stomach, anything else she swallowed and regurgitated, that would, you know, confirm if this was a trick or, you know, something real. So Helen agrees to take this blue tablet. But very conveniently, that seance, there was no ectoplasm at all.
Oh.
So, the LSA is like, alright, it's false, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
So, there is Harry Price, he does this whole investigation to expose her of fraud. He sees the ectoplasm. God, it's something else, okay?
Look, she has six kids. She's just trying to support herself and her family. I don't know why I'm still on her side.
I don't know. You want it to be a good story. So he does. So Harry Price, he comes in, he finds the, you know, the ectoplasm is fake, right? And he's able to recreate it as well. In 1931, that he does some test seances, and he pays Helen £50, which is equivalent to 4,300 pounds in 2024.
Oh my God.
And he pays her this to conduct a series of controlled seances because, like I said, she was already at this point suspected of swallowing the cheesecloth and regurgitating this. He attempted to do like an x-ray on Duncan to rule out any hidden materials, and she reacts violently. She even attacked her own husband, another investigator. She ran into the street screaming. She was clutching at a rail, hysterical. She tore her seance garment in front of a crowd. Police arrived, but they were persuaded not to take her to the hospital. Like, her husband seemed to have talked it down. So he's like, I'm just
going on.
He's just trying to figure out what she's doing. And she's like, no, no, no. This is my way of living. So, you know, everyone's like, okay, you're doing something. So
the most.
Yeah. Now, during another seance, the researchers attempted to cut off a piece of the ectoplasm so they could examine it. And the moment they did, she swallowed it, preventing any further analysis.
Ma'am.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, the material retrieved, and this is just going into more depth on that LSA, but they found what it was, and it's like, it's paper soaked in egg whites. Like, it's disgusting.
You couldn't even try, like, what year was this?
1950s,
1920s?
60s? Oh, no, 30s. I'm sorry, 1930s.
It's okay. I'm still way off.
Oh, you're way off, yeah.
So she couldn't have found anything, like, ma'am, Jell-O?
She possibly didn't have Google.
Yeah, but that should make it easier, because ectoplasm can be anything at that point. Anything, like, some watered-down Jell-O, like,
no, she had to make it super convincing. So Price, he publishes photographic evidence of Duncan using this cheesecloth and all this stuff. He even publishes that she was using cutout magazine heads to fake spirit materializations. And then you have psychologist William McDougall, who attends two seances, and he declares her whole seance an act, and it's fraudulent.
Oh.
And later, Helen Duncan's former maid, Mary McGinley, she later confesses that she was assisting Helen in making these tricks. And then,
okay.
Oh, it gets better. Even later.
We don't have to gang up on
her. Oh, well, it's going to continue ganging up on her, because now her beloved husband even admits that the ectoplasm was regurgitated material.
How dare you?
Yeah. And oftentimes, Helen Duncan had nosebleeds during seances, so this again leads investigators, this one is specifically William Brown, to suggest she also hid fake ectoplasm in her nasal passages.
Ma'am.
Yeah.
Ew.
Yeah. In 1936, It's a researcher, Nando Fodor, offered... So in 1936, researcher Nando Fodor offered Duncan money if she would allow her seances to be filmed using an infrared camera, and she refused.
There you go, girl. Yeah.
So all of this to say, like, it's not going well. I mean, this started in 1931, because she was publicly denounced as a fraud by the Morning Post newspaper in 1931. And that's not what I meant to put on. So she's denounced as a fraud by the Morning Post. So that's kind of just like the history or some of, you know, the investigation into her. So we're going to go back in time because all of this, you know, 1936 is when she's refused the infrared camera. But in 1933, specifically on January 6th, 1933, during a seance in Edinburgh, Helen claimed to manifest the spirit of a little girl named Peggy. Now, I had some confusion here because a lot of sources said that Peggy was also her spirit guide, but I'm not sure if this is the same Peggy as her spirit guide or a little girl.
Okay.
But she manifests the spirit of a little girl named Peggy, and her sister. Oh, sorry, not her sister. A sitter named Essen Mall apparently just wasn't believing. They're like, this is not real. And he grabs the quote unquote spirit. And again, it goes downhill for Helen because the lights flick on and Peggy wasn't a ghost. She was just a stockinette under vest.
Oh.
Yeah. She was just, it was a doll. She was just made from a stockinette under vest. So police are called.
Okay, that feels like, hold on.
Necessary.
It feels very unnecessary. Like, how did this is 0 to 100 here.
Well, she's charged with fraudulent mediumship. She is charged.
That's just a wild charge. Is that still a thing?
Yeah, we'll talk. She was prosecuted at Edinburgh Sheriff Court, and she was fined £10 or given the option of a month in prison. She was also charged with affray, which is a charge related to public disturbances, which makes it sound like, you know, these seances were getting rowdy. I didn't get clarification. I believe she paid the £10, but I didn't get clarification on which one she did.
I feel like the rowdiness wasn't really her. I feel like that was that man who grabbed her ghost being and turned the light on. I feel like she was a victim in that situation and that situation only.
I'm just saying that's what she was charged with. So the spiritualist journal Light, which had previously been open to investigating psychic phenomena, agreed with the court and they called her a fraud. They're like, yeah, no. They also backed Harry Price's earlier investigation, confirming that her ectoplasm was just cheesecloth. And then her husband is also under suspicion, with investigators believing he helped hide her fake ectoplasm before seances. So, like, this is turning into a whole family thing. We don't know what the kids did, but they were never listed. Like, it's a whole thing.
Oh, no. And
there's just more ectoplasm samples, more proof that she's a fraud. Historian Malcolm Gaskill later found a sample of Duncan's ectoplasm in the archives of the Society for Psychical Research at Cambridge University Library. And the analysis revealed it was just a length of artificial silk, not some otherworldly energy. And I mean, as recent as 2018, the sample was even displayed at the Spellbound exhibition at a museum in Oxford, showcasing fraudulent magical practices through history. And the Cambridge University Library still holds the sample today, so you can actually go see a photo of it on their website if you really wanted to. I didn't pull the photo because I didn't care.
Imagine being such a bad scammer that people still tote your regurgitated material around the world and showcase it today, 100 years later.
Imagine that you were so bad, your fraudulent magical powers are part of a museum.
I don't know if that's something to be proud of or ashamed of. It could honestly go either way. Like, you could be like, yeah, I was a fraud, but look how fraudulent I was.
But I wasn't good at it. So
this gives whole new meaning to good at being bad.
So it gets worse, though, for her.
Oh,
so,
no.
In November 1941, during World War II, Helen Duncan holds a seance in Portsmouth, where she claimed that the spirit of a sailor had revealed to her that the HMS Barham had sunk.
Oh.
The issue with this is that the British government had not yet publicly announced the sinking. Only the relatives of the casualties had been informed under strict secrecy. So HMS Barham was sunk by a German U-boat U-331 in the Mediterranean, resulting in the deaths of 861 British seamen. The British government had tried to hush up the loss, keeping it classified for months to maintain morale and avoid intelligence leaks. So when they hear of this, this raises red flags with the Navy, and they begin keeping an eye on Duncan.
Oh, my God.
They're like, excuse me, ma'am, how do you know about the sinking of the ship?
They're like, get somebody in that seance get now.
Someone there. And they do. They do. Because on January 14th, 1944, two Navy lieutenants attend one of Duncan's seances to investigate. One of them, Lieutenant Worth, he was less than impressed with the white cloth spirit, when a white cloth spirit emerged, claiming to be his aunt. The issue is he didn't have a deceased aunt. And then another figure appears claiming to be his sister, and Worth is just sick of this. He's immediately responded, "She's alive and well, thanks." He is disgusted by the seance, and so he reports Helen Duncan to the police again.
What? That's because he was so upset. He was like, "I came here to investigate a legitimate leak in our intelligence, and all I got was my intelligence insulted." Call the police.
He literally was like, "Officer, please fix this." So that was on January 14th. On January 19th, 1944, undercover officers attend another one of her seances, and they raid the room mid-session. So a white shrouded figure had just appeared, and they turned the lights on. And the shrouded figure was actually Helen, dressed in a white cloth, which she tried to hide when she was caught. And she was arrested on the spot. So when they raided this on the 19th, officers actually tried to stop the ectoplasm from coming out of her mouth. They failed. They just were like, "Keep that in. Don't regurgitate that. Keep it there." And she's police,
like, "I can't."
She's like, "Hold on, too late." The police raid on her seance in 1944 was covered extensively in newspapers. And they had a field day printing cartoons of witches on broomsticks. They thought it was hilarious.
Why is this poor woman still doing seances?
No.
And do the police not have anything better to do? Are they like, "You know what? There's been no child kidnapping for a while. Let's go see what Helen's doing."
Right. It was so bad. So let's just a little recap here. So researchers like Graham Donald, I don't know if I said his name right, sorry. They argue, like, obviously Helen Duncan didn't have any psychic abilities. She just overheard the nudes. The sinking of HMS Barham on November 25th, 1941 was meant to be a secret, but there were letters of condolences that were sent to 861 families.
Oh, wow.
If each grieving family told just one or two people, thousands of people would have known within weeks. So, I mean, it wouldn't have been far from, you know, a tightly kept secret.
True.
And it was discovered that a secretary of First Sea Lord had been indiscreet, leaking the news to a Ministry of Economic Warfare professor. He was never arrested, but he had been leaking this information.
And honestly, all it takes is one person to come in to her. Because I assume during this, some people are still going to go to her, especially if you're desperate to talk to your loved ones. And if they're like, "Hey, I'm not supposed to say anything, but this ship sank and I want to talk to my husband." That's all it takes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's all it's going to take. In addition to all of this, Duncan was found in possession of a fake HMS Barham hat band, which this was meant to suggest she had some of the spirit of a dead sailor from the ship.
Okay.
The problem is that... Poor taste. I know. By 1939, British sailors' hat bands no longer identified individual ships. They just said HMS. So this was like another piece where it proved she didn't actually get her information from a real spirit, right? The sinking was... Okay. Yeah. So, at first, she was arrested under the Vagrancy Act of 1824, which this was a minor offense. However, the authorities wanted more serious charges because they were worried she might continue leaking classified information. And it didn't matter how she got it. They didn't care if she got it as a psychic or on the streets. They just didn't want her to leak it. So, prosecutors, they dig up this act called the Witchcraft Act of 1735.
Stop it.
Yes.
Are you... Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Is this going to be like the last witch trial in Europe or some shit?
We'll talk about it. Calm your ass down.
Oh my God. I don't know if I'm impressed or just embarrassed.
We'll talk, okay? So... They dig up this Witchcraft Act of 1735, which criminalized fraudulent spiritual activity and charged her under Section 4. So alongside her, three others were charged. Ernest and Elizabeth Homer, who ran a psychic center in Portsmouth, and then Francis Brown, Duncan's agent, who helped organize her seances. So the charges included two counts of conspiracy to contravene the Witchcraft Act, two counts of obtaining money by false pretenses, and three counts of public mischief. So,
okay, all fair. They all sound accurate. But what did the couple, like, Why did they get lumped into this?
It was I'm just throwing them out. They're not necessarily working with her, but they're like also
they're in the trial.
Not in the same trial, but they're also being charged just to show not just her, but it's also just her.
Yeah. I misunderstood. I thought they were all part of the same trial. And I was like, dang, these poor people are going to get a bum deal.
Yeah. So just to go into a little bit of what the Witchcraft Act of 1735 was. So the Witchcraft Act of 1735 made it a crime to claim that someone had magical powers or was practicing witchcraft. Instead of hunting and executing witches, the law treated witchcraft as fraud. So that meant anyone pretending to have supernatural abilities could be prosecuted. Now, this is important because it ended the witch trials in Great Britain, and this marked the shift from superstitious persecution to a more rational legal system. Prior witch laws had assumed that witches were real and had powers from Satan, and this act reversed that, treating all claims of magic as deception. And the law followed a trend across Europe where witch trials had peaked around 1600 and died down by the 1700s. Now, initially, the law wasn't widely debated. The only one, MP James Irksine, opposing it because he still believed in witches, which basically ruined the political, ruined his political credibility at the time. By the 19th century, it was being used to crack down on ignorance, superstition, and fraud, particularly targeting charlatans and con artists. Later, it was reinforced by the Vagrancy Act of 1824, which is also used to go after fortune tellers and so-called witches. Now, despite this having been over 200 years old, the Witchcraft Act was still on the books and was used to convict Helen Duncan. The last high-profile case under the law was Helen Duncan. Authorities used it as a way to prosecute fraudulent mediums, especially during World War II when the government feared leaks of classified information. Another medium, Jane Rebecca York, was also convicted in 1944 for pretending to summon spirits. So the case against Helen Duncan, her trial was the first time the Witchcraft Act had been used in well over a century. She was denied the right to appeal to the House of Lords, which was unusual for this type of case. Prosecutors argued she was nothing more than a con artist using cheap parlor tricks to deceive people. The ectoplasm she allegedly produced was nothing supernatural. It was cheesecloth paper or just other regurgitated materials. They also pointed out that she could have easily learned about HMS Barham sinking through gossip rather than supernatural means. And they state this because she was living in Portsmouth at the time, which was home to the Royal Navy, meaning she had a lot of easy access to military gossip.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Now, the defense's argument, supporters insisted she was a genuine medium and she was being unfairly targeted. They claimed that wartime paranoia was the real reason she was on trial. And other spiritualists were left alone, so why are they targeting Duncan? So that's the defense's arguments. The case relied entirely on witness testimony, since there was no physical evidence of fraud, like there could have been found during, you know, a typical raid. They did not have the cheesecloth to have, like, as part of her fraud. Like, they didn't have that as part of the physical evidence. I don't know why, it just showed that they didn't. But historian and senior Freemason Alfred Dodd testified, insisting Duncan was authentic. He was like, no, she's authentic. And in a controversial move, the judge barred Duncan from demonstrating her abilities in court, making it impossible for her to prove her powers were real.
Okay, I feel like to me, I would be, as a judge, I would be like, you know what? Go for it.
Like, all right, let's see what you can do, lady.
You're in my house now, ma'am.
Yeah. Now, the jury found her guilty on the first count, and the judge dismissed the remaining charges. So, Helen Duncan, she was sentenced to 9 months in Holloway Prison, despite appeals and public outcry. 9 months. Frances Brown, another one, she received 4 months, and Ernest and Elizabeth Homer were, they were bound over. I think I didn't mean to put that. I believe their cases were dismissed. After the trial, Churchill wrote a memo. Winston Churchill wrote a memo to the Home Secretary. And he mocked the trial as a ridiculous waste of time, writing to the Home Secretary that the charges were, quote, obsolete tomfoolery.
Which, I mean,
yeah. Here, okay, Britain was literally fighting Nazis, and they're out here concerned about a medium that could have just heard this through the grapevine. So if she heard it through the grapevine, everyone else did. Like,
that's what I'm confused about. Like, she had to have pissed someone off.
Yeah. Well, here's what it is. Some people believe that Helen Duncan was in prison because British intelligence feared she might reveal the upcoming doomsday landings. This has never been officially confirmed, but considering she named HMS Sinking before it was supposed to be public knowledge, it's easy to see why maybe authorities could have had concerns. You know, they just don't want their secrets leaked. Now, before Helen went to prison, she was already in poor health, and so she suffered a little bit more in prison. She had supporters that protested, saying she was being unfairly punished. A lot of people feared she would die in prison, but she served her time, and she was released in late 1994. So she did her time. She moved on. Now,
wow, that feels like...
Yeah.
That was within my lifetime.
Not 1994. I'm sorry. 1944.
That was not within my lifetime.
I was like, wait, hold on. That's not within your lifetime.
Because I was thinking, like, she said just a few months, but maybe I got the dates wrong.
No. I'm sorry. Okay. I meant 1944.
Oh, yeah. Nowhere near in my life. Excuse me.
I was like, wait. That's not our lifetime.
Well, she lived a long time.
Yeah, she was in there. They were not letting her get any secrets out. In 1944, Helen Duncan became one of the last people convicted under the Witchcraft Act of 1735, which made it illegal to falsify the claim to summon spirits. She was sentenced to 9 months, blah, blah, blah. Sorry, that's a repeat. Now, Helen Duncan, she was not the last person convicted under the Witchcraft Act. That title actually goes to Jane Rebecca York. She was convicted later in 1944. York, she was in her 70s. She received a significantly lighter sentence, which was a fine instead of jail time. So what this is that Helen Duncan was the last person to be jailed under this act, not convicted. Okay. So she's released. Duncan promises to stop conducting seances, but it's her calling. She just had to.
Helen.
So she doesn't keep that promise.
Oh, God.
In 1956, she was caught holding yet another seance and was arrested again. This time, there were no charges brought against her. She died shortly after in her home in Edinburgh. Let's just talk really quick about the Witchcraft Act, because they didn't charge her this time under the Witchcraft Act of 1735. Because after Duncan's trial, it really pushed a repeal of this Witchcraft Act. The law was officially replaced in 1951 by the Fraudulent Mediums Act, which focused on consumer protection against fraud rather than supernatural claims. So the repeal was led by Labour's MP Walter Monslow and Thomas Brooks, the latter of whom was a spiritualist and campaigned heavily to overturn the law. So basically they changed it. They're okay, we don't have the Witchcraft Act, but they now have the Fraudulent Mediums Act. So she was arrested under that, but they never charged her. Now, even though this law was appealed, her conviction stood. It was still on her record. There was a campaign that was launched to clear her name, but there was never an official pardon.
Pardon.
So, there was never an official pardon. Helen Duncan, she, like I said, she died in her home on December 6th, 1956. And this was shortly after holding another seance. Some of the spiritualists claimed that her death was caused by the sudden retraction of ectoplasm when police raided her seance and turned on the lights. Essentially, shock from breaking her trance. So they're like, no, the police killed her by causing this. But then I'm like, but they've done it before.
But the retraction of ectoplasm? You mean the literal paper and water and cheesecloth? So she choked to death?
No, not during the seance. So that was, they're saying that was an after, like it made her sick afterwards. Here's my thing is that can't be healthy to be ingesting, whether she is regurgitating it or not.
Yeah.
Some of that's in your system. That? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Now, medical records claim to tell a different story. Helen Duncan supposedly had a long history of poor health. By 1944, when she was originally arrested under the Witchcraft Act, she was described as obese, slow-moving, and suffering from heart trouble. So there's not any evidence to say that her death wasn't anything more than natural causes.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, after her death, she became widely cited as an example of a fraudulent medium. There are still some spiritualists that defend her. I'm going to throw that out there. A lot of people still defend her. Supporters ignored evidence of fraud, such as the cheesecloth ectoplasm, while a lot of critics just dismiss her mediumship entirely. Researcher Simeon Edmonds criticized spiritualist media like Psychic News for bias and distorting facts to favor Duncan. Science writer Mary Roach praised Harry Price's debunking methods, reinforcing that, you know, Helen Duncan was a fraudulent medium. Even with all of this, there was still a bronze bust of Helen Duncan that was created and presented to her hometown of Callander. I don't know if I'm saying that right. I'm assuming I am. There are, however, some religious groups that protested in its public display, leading the bust to be removed, moved to the Sterling Smith Art Gallery and Museum. So there's a lot of, you know, pop culture reference and retellings. In 2009, the heavy metal band Seventh Son released The Last Witch in England, which was a song about Duncan's life. In 2010, BBC Radio 4 aired a drama, The Last Witch Trial, featuring Joanne Monroe as Duncan and Indira Varma as an undercover investigator. But even with all of this, Helen Duncan's descendants are still trying to get a pardon for her. They've been rejected by the Scottish Parliament in 2001, 2008, and 2012. So they're still campaigning. They're still trying to clear, you know, her name. The questions are, was she really that dangerous? Like, could she really have been that dangerous?
That's my thing. Like, even as, like, someone who's, like, gonna tell your military secrets, like, if she knows them, somebody's already telling them.
Yeah, so why is she the one punished?
Yeah, and she's like, why? She, at that point, she had been widely criticized as a fraud.
Yeah.
So I also don't understand why she was so severely punished for this.
Yeah, I don't know. And it's, well, here's the other part, is to go back and just be like, all right, Witchcraft Act, use it. Like, we've dug it up, use it.
Like, yeah. You know, someone was like, hey, remember 200 years ago, in school, we learned about the witches in history. You think those laws are still good?
And someone was like, dig it up.
Yeah.
That's the craziest part to me, is that she was tried under this Witchcraft Act.
There's so many pieces of this, right? Like, of this story, that if we were to be able to go back in time, like, her seances, for example, if we were able to go back in time now, just sitting there, and all of these people are, like, mystified, I just feel like I would be like, what? Right? Like the cop who's like, she's alive and well, thanks.
Right.
Like, what do you, that's ectoplasm? Can I touch it? No. Why not?
Can I have some? You gave it to other people. Why can't I have some?
In one of these pictures, do you happen to know why this guy's legs are tied?
Hold on. Let me, child's dropping a bottle. Let me look.
In one of them, there's like ropes going around. It looks like the chairs. And his legs are tied.
Her legs are not. I didn't notice that.
I assume it has to do something. It has to be something with, like,
I assume those are customers.
Yeah. I'm going to tie your legs so you know I'm not fooling you. Or
I don't know. But that's...
still hate this doll. I hate it so much.
It's so horrible, but you know what? And it's one of those things that I'm like, this is sadly funny, because, like, really? You guys went back to a vault and were like, find me anything to keep her here!
Yeah. And then for her to actually, like, get tried on it, and still being tried on it now, like, if they can't get her name.
I mean, it's not necessarily that she's being tried. She's convicted.
That's a better word. Yeah. Like, but for her name still not to be cleared, it's just, guys, it's 2025.
I know.
Justice for Helen.
I mean, but at the same time, she was convicted in 1944, so it's like, why, I guess it's like, why would, and even at that though, she would have been convicted on the new act. It's just really, to me, it seemed to just rename it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like, okay, according to the law, she did break the law. Like, legally, she broke the law. But I'm with you on, like, the why was she punished so severely and other people, like, this was very common for those days.
Right. Because she just happened to be the one to say something about the ship sinking. Why didn't you figure out where she learned it from?
Right. Like, instead of being like, oh, well, now you got to go to jail. Why not? And maybe they did, and she wouldn't give up her secret, but...
I guess maybe obstruction of justice, but they couldn't prove that.
I just feel like she got railroaded.
She did. She so did. It was... Like I said, I saw this on TikTok, and I said, this isn't real. There's no way this happened in the 1900s. No, it did. So, anyways, that's my story.
Okay. I guess it's my turn, right?
I think that's how this works, yeah.
Oh, okay. So, my story is La Bête Noire in Cajun French. And when I say Cajun French, you know where we are, right?
No.
Really? When I say Cajun French, you don't know French? You don't know where this takes place? You don't have a guess?
I mean, I want to say it's... I know it's wrong. I want to say it's... Oh my God.
It's in the U.S.
I know, but I can't think of... it's one of the southern states, but I can't think of which one.
It's Louisiana.
Oh, that would make... Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Okay.
Listen, everyone else was screaming at you.
I just got done talking about ectoplasm where she was regurgitating toilet paper.
Okay. Yeah. And you're not from the South either, so...
Yeah.
Everybody be nice to Bryce. Shut up.
You know what? Let's start quizzing you guys on Utah things.
Please don't, ever. So this creature is found in Louisiana. St. Tammany Parish, specifically in the Honey Island Swamp. And, like, the Honey Island Swamp is the perfect place for a cryptid. Because the swamp is 250 square acres, is located at the Louisiana-Mississippi border, near the mouth of the Pearl River. And in this swamp is a grassland forest. It's between the East and West rivers. And this forest is 7 miles wide at its widest and 20 miles long.
That seems so small for a forest.
Yeah, but it was described as like dense. And you can see in one of the pictures that the picture called Womp JPEG. I think it's supposed to be Swamp. Womp Womp. It's very dense. Like, that is as swamp get. That is okay. Louisiana swamp. So this swamp is located in a 70,000 acre. Okay. I'm a little confused on this and I may be wrong, but either the swamp is located in or the swamp is 70,000 acres is a wildlife preserve. This swamp is said to be unique because it's one of the least altered river swamps in the country. So it's been described as pristine wilderness. It's home to alligators, black bears, panthers, red wolves, deer, wild boar, exotic birds, including the bald eagle. There's also multiple species of fish and La Bête Noire. Locals also call this guy the Louisiana Wookiee, the Thing, and Rougarou, which is a different cryptid. I covered that cryptid previously way back in episode 21. But the Honey Island Monster, witnesses claim it is 7 feet tall. It's covered in gray hair. It has either red or yellow eyes.
Sorry, I did some Googling. The 70,000 acres would be the swamp, because that is about equivalent to 109 square miles. 7 by 20 is 140 square miles. So it's probably... Okay,
perfect. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, so the 70,000 is the swamp
itself. It's
probably, yeah, itself. Good God. It doesn't sound that big when you're like 70 miles wide, but that's just this little island.
Honey 70 island. Miles or seven?
I'm sorry, seven.
Okay, I was like, wait, I did my math wrong.
Let me get my life together ASAP. Witnesses claim that it is 7 feet tall, covered in gray hair. It has either red or yellow eyes. It smells absolutely putrid, which...
Don't they all, though?
It's a hairy monster in a swamp. Like, what do you expect? And then the arms are proportionally longer than a human's. So, disproportionate. Plaster cast footprints.
So, they just have, like, super long
arms. Yes. Plaster cast footprints are said to be from this creature. That are said to be from this creature. Show it to have only three or four toes, depending on how you look at it. Unlike primates, which are five-toed, and the Honey Island Swamp Monster, its footprints are also webbed.
Oh, no, thanks.
It is believed to be related to the Mississippi Swamp Ape, the Florida Skunk Ape, and the grandfather, the godfather of all humanoid apes. Bryce, what is it?
Bigfoot.
Yes, Bigfoot.
Sorry, it took me a second because I was like, foot, big foot. I knew who you were talking. I was trying to think the word Sasquatch.
That's what I was expecting you to say. And when you said Bigfoot, I was like, in my mind, I was like, oh, I mean, well, still right. But I'm surprised she didn't say Sasquatch.
That's what I was trying to think of. But like, I was just going to text Cody at the same time. So like, you asking me a question caught me off guard.
Perfect. I did the perfect teacher thing.
I'm kidding. I was just trying to ask Cody to come grab child.
But yes, you're still right. They're believed to be related to Sasquatch. The first reported sighting was in 1963. Harlan Ford, he's a retired air traffic controller, and he picked up the hobby of wildlife photography in his retirement. And I mean, what better place to photograph photography than in this swamp, I guess?
Maybe he was like, I can find a beauty in this.
Boy, did he. So Harlan and his friend Billy Mills, they had flown over the swamp in a small plane, and they noticed an abandoned camp. So they were like, oh, let's check it out. So they decided to trek the swamp.
No, don't check that out, guys. That's dumb. What if it's not actually abandoned? Or what if there's a monster?
Well, not only that. Maybe
it's abandoned for a reason.
They made their way to it on foot.
Oh, they're dumb. They're like, so dumb.
In a swamp in Louisiana? I've seen that guy on TikTok. I see all the things he comes across.
I'm just saying, like, an abandoned camp doesn't seem like a good idea to go to in any circumstance.
You're retired. Y'all can do anything. You can do whatever you want.
He wants that.
So, it did say that they were skilled hunters. So, I guess this wasn't a big deal to them. Okay. I just shivered, like. So yeah, they just decided to spend their day walking through a swamp virtually untouched by human.
No, thank you.
Either way, they did make their way through this vegetation, and they stepped out into a small clearing. And in this clearing, they saw a massive creature on all fours. And in...
Leave!
In what I feel is very unskilled hunter fashion... Billy said, what is that thing?
What's that thing? That's the Alabama white thing.
Well, that thing, it stood upright because it heard him, and it turned to face them, and they said that it stared directly into their eyes.
Oh, God, no. Nope, you're good. I didn't mean to disturb you. Bye-bye.
And it stayed like this for a few seconds. Looking into their peepholes.
Nope.
And then ran off into the nearby tree line. And at this point, I would be out. Like, I gotta go anywhere else.
I didn't see anything. I'm not gonna say anything. I know nothing.
Billy and Harlan, they got their rifles ready and ran to the edge of the woods to see if they could still see it.
Why? Why? Why?
But it had disappeared. They found its tracks, though. And no. They did try to come back the next day, but they had been washed away by a rainstorm. So they were unable to even find them anymore.
Thank goodness someone's looking out for you guys.
God. And or Mother Nature.
Yeah, thank God.
Now, Harlan's granddaughter, Dana Holyfield, she later wrote a book describing the stories that her father had told her family. And a quote from that book goes, Harlan said it was like nothing I'd ever seen before. Ugly and sinister and looking like something out of a horror movie.
So mean. Could we stop insulting all these cryptids?
Harlan and Billy described it as standing about 7 feet tall. I hate that. Its loins were slender, but its chest and shoulders were tremendous. And it had long grayish hair on its head and short, dingy gray hair on its body.
Who was focused on their loins?
Did you have to say loins?
Did you have to focus? Ugh, no.
And dingy guys, just felt mean.
Stop. Oh my.
In 1974, Harlan and Billy were on a fishing trip with a group of old co-workers. And after the sun went down, Billy's boat motor ran hot due to a malfunctioning water pump. So Harlan was taking the men back to their camp in his boat. And he took two men to camp. They started working on a fire, and then Harlan left to go back and get the others from the boat. The men had to navigate through some rapids on one part of the trip. And during the trip to go rescue the men left in the boat, his headlight landed on a bluff overlooking the river, where he saw this creature standing there watching. And he would obviously have to shine his light back to the water to navigate, but every time he would shine it back to the bluff, this creature was still there watching it.
I think maybe you should stop shining it back at the
That's
bluff.
That's what I'm saying. Like, just go about your business. I don't want to know.
Move on. Fine.
But also, maybe he's making sure he's still there. Because, what's the alternative?
The alternative is I die without knowing what killed me, okay? That's the alternative. That's the happy alternative.
When he reached the sandbar, he told the men what he saw. And Jim Hartzog, wouldn't you know it, Jim Hartzog hollered, "Give me that gun of yours. I'm going up there and shoot that booger for you boys."
Oh, I don't think it's going to like being called a booger.
He took Harlan's rifle and he headed off towards the bluff. And the guys that were still there, they thought he was joking and he probably wasn't going far. You know, he was just going to go into the woods, fire off a couple shots and come back. So Harlan, he went back to get another load of guys and go back to the campsite. And I will say it's unclear of how many guys were on this trip, but if there were two boats, you know, depending on how big the boats and the motors are, it could easily be like six, maybe seven people. I would think eight would be too many, you know, if they're going on rapids in a water and on a river in a swamp. I don't know. I'm not a skilled hunter, so I don't know. But anyway.
You might be more skilled than these people. Don't chase spooky things, guys.
And if you see something strange, don't
sit. We're not doing. Yeah. See something, say something with the paranormal.
Absolutely
see
not.
Something, leave it.
You elbow me or something. Or do the whole, like, you know, the bicep slap.
Pokey pokey, yes. And get the hell out.
Freaking call attention to yourself. What a rookie move. Anyway.
I thought I was a rookie. At least I know not to yell.
Harlan gets back with the group and they heard gunshots. And the friends, like I said, they, you know, they thought that he was just messing with them. But Billy and Harlan, they've seen this creature before. Harlan has now seen it twice. So they're worried. So they get in their boat and they go back downstream to try and find Jim. And they see a flashlight, like, waving in the distance. And when they get to the light, they find Jim waist deep in the water beneath the bluff. And he's trembling and wide-eyed. So...
because he went to take care of that booger, and the booger took care of him.
The booger took care of him. The booger booged back.
Oh, God.
Once they,
I don't think that's what anyone wants to happen, right?
The last thing you want is a booger to boog back. Once they got him back to camp, and he calmed down, once he was able to talk, he told the other men what happened. And he said that he went into the woods and he saw this creature and he shot at it and he hit it. So he thought. The creature ran off into the woods and he followed it, where he found a big set of yellow eyes, taller than he was. And this thing was growling at him. So Jim shot at it again.
Yeah, you just shot at it. Quit shooting at it. You're pissing it off.
He shot at it again. And this is when he realized he only had one bullet left. So Jim did the smartest thing he's ever done. He ran and jumped off the bluff into the water.
God, finally, someone that has some common sense. I mean, that'd been nice to have before.
This is where Billy and Harlem eventually found. Allegedly, none of the men slept that night because they were afraid that it was going to come back. Also fair.
Me too.
This is a sighting that allowed them to get a cast of the tracks, and I included the picture of that cast. Scientists have looked at this and allegedly claimed the tracks look like a cross between an alligator and a primate, but it's never been identified. And they also made sure to say, like, you know, that fun little kingdom, phylum, class, order, family, genus, species. Primates and alligators can't reproduce. So they felt the need to specify that. So here I am also specifying.
I knew that, but thanks for the clarity.
You're welcome.
I guess maybe some people... Hey, Dad, did you know that they can't reproduce? Yeah.
No alligator ape baby.
God, I hope not. That sounds so awful.
Can you just imagine an alligator swinging through the trees?
I'm just imagining it going, oh! Beating its chest.
That's the only time an alligator would ever be able to reach its chest. Poor guys. Okay, there's some people that claim that those tracks were made with a shoe specifically built, cobbled, I don't know. Basically, they argue that somebody made shoes for this reason and made these tracks with those specially made shoes. Because, well, I mean, obviously.
Couple things. Why do they need to make these tracks?
That's my thing. And like, if I'm gonna make fake tracks, I'm not gonna go purchase a shoe specifically made for this. I feel like I could just use sticks.
But I will say, it would make sense why there's the inconsistency with the toe count, because the pressure is different if it's a shoe that's not like to an actual contoured foot. So it would make sense why they're seeing 3 versus 4, you know, not the same or consistent amount of track.
Well, some, if you look at the picture, some people claim, because you have 3 obvious, like, yep, those are toes, they're webbed. And then you've got 1 on the side. Some people claim that that is another toe. Some people claim that it's not. So that's why I say 3, sometimes 4, depending on how you look at this track.
I mean, I'm just saying.
It looks like 4 to me.
I mean, it looks like 4 to me, yeah. But what do I know?
Okay, yeah.
I wasn't there.
Me neither, so. Let's see. People also report that the area they were in got strangely quiet before seeing this creature. Like, you know, the world around you gets quiet, the birds quit singing and making noise, and in a swamp, you got a lot of birds, a lot of bugs, a lot of animals. I cannot imagine a quiet swamp ever. So that's creepy.
I have never been in a swamp that memory that I can recall.
It's noisy.
Okay. So that's just me. Like the rest of the world.
Yes. Imagine imagine, you know how it sounds when bugs are constantly flying in your ears? Yeah. Times like 50 to 100 along with every other animal. It's mainly the bugs that I remember. God, it's horrible. Other people report hearing growls, chewing, which I hate, screams.
Why chewing?
Because he's got to eat. They hear screams. One man described a shrieking scream that raised the hair on the back of his neck. And another spoke of a spine-shivering territorial howl. People also hear heavy walking, tearing and ripping of tree bark.
Why do we have to just tear and rip at the trees? They didn't do anything. They didn't do anything.
Well, it's, some people report seeing him. I'm just assuming it's a him. There's multiple. Some people see more than one. So obviously can't be only hims. But
it can be them.
It can be thems. It can be theys. People have reported seeing them eating bugs from underneath the tree bark. So they'll like rip off the tree bark, get the bugs underneath it. They hear tree limbs snapping. Okay. This, it's not funny. It's funny.
It's not funny, but I'm laughing.
Okay, this is a quote. People have reported hearing the audible sound made after running into a tree.
my grunt because I just ran into
it. Yes, tree. And like, is that's why it's kind of funny because like, it's sad because like, bro, why are you running into trees? You live out here. That would be like me walking into my couch. But
maybe that tree was just rearranged because they were tearing and scratching true. At it.
It's just funny because as soon as I read that, I heard the sound in my head. Like, we've all been you there, right? The, And
when I walk into a coffee table,
people,
I feel like it's probably more dramatic though. If it's
it has to, well, it has to be more dramatic because he's 7 feet tall and reportedly 400 pounds. Now, what also made me laugh was in the same paragraph, actually the sentence after, it said that people use this to argue that this means that this creature can communicate vocally. And I would just like to point out that I have spoke of this creature screaming and growling and grunting. But
and running into trees.
This is what lets you know that it's able to communicate vocally. Okay. Yes. Feel like I could have been a scientist if that's the if that's the conclusions we're coming to. Other people report that it runs so fast that it's unbelievable. Another report comes from a father and son. And this is also a quote. They were walking up to the river when they heard a splash. They turned to see a dark, hairy creature, very muscular, standing with its back to them at the river's edge. The creature then pulled a cypress stump out of the mud and threw it into the river. They froze and were dumbstruck. They guessed it caught wind of them because it turned to look directly at them and then walked briskly away down the river's edge.
I was like, oh shit, my moment of alone time has been ruined.
So you weren't far off when you said maybe it was just rearranged. Because this guy's just throwing stumps into the river.
He was having a crisis, and he had to have some his me spot, some me time to think things through.
And two people saw him. That's why he turned around.
They ruined it.
And walked away because he was embarrassed. He was like, man, they saw my timber tantrum.
Just trying to think things through. I envision it like throwing something in the water like someone would skip a rock.
That's exactly what I'm thinking. People claim that the Honey Island Swamp Monster is a descendant of escaped chimpanzees from a traveling circus in the 1960s. Others say that it's a completely undiscovered species. They think that it's an ancient creature linked to prehistoric reptiles that has just adapted. Reptiles.
Reptiles.
I told you he was sad, Bryce.
He was skipping that log.
They think that it's a creature linked to prehistoric reptiles that has just adapted to the swamp over the years. I don't know what kind of adaptation would lead you to be 7 feet tall and 400 pounds again. What are you adapting to? That feels like, and the fur, I don't know. Again, not a scientist. Now, if you want a chance to see this creature, you can actually book a tour of Honey Island Swamp, which have become very popular. partly because of the Honey Island Swamp Monster. People, y'all, people love paranormal. They want to see this stuff. You can also visit the Abita Mystery House / UCM Museum in Abita Springs, Louisiana. And there, along with a ton of other oddities, you can see the plaster cast that was donated to the museum by Dana Holyfield, along with like the Bassa Gator, and I think the Fiji Mermaid was there. Like when I went to the website, it had a picture of the Fiji Mermaid, and it said the Fiji Mermaid has friends at Abita Mystery House.
Oh. Yeah.
So it was either there or it has friends, alleged. But yeah, that's the Honey Island Swamp Monster.
I hate it. I'm sorry. First of all, we don't have to be rude. We don't have to call everyone stinky, okay? No. Not everyone has access to running water.
Like, this guy's running water is in a swamp. Cut him a break.
Like, give him... Okay, just leave him alone, okay? The other part is no thing. Do not holler to get something's attention. Don't be like, what's that dang thing over there?
Like, come on, guys. God.
Common sense. If you're experienced, act experienced.
Yeah. Thank you. That's all I'm asking.
That's all we're asking for, okay? Just act what you claim to be. Ugh. Hate it. I hate it. I hate it.
Ugh. These are actually the best pictures that I found, too, because some of them basically show Sasquatch with an alligator head. Yeah, that's an image. Let me tell you.
I really want to see it.
Okay, now. I'll find it.
Okay, do it. I dare you. Triple dog dare you. Listen. I'm unsettled with this thing. This swampy Sasquatch. But also just leave him alone. Good. Why do we have to make a spectacle of him? They're not in a zoo.
That's how I feel. Like, and like, also, I would not be caught dead in this swamp. There's so many things. Like, in one of them, in one of the pictures, I mean, there was a picture of all these people on a boat, and there was a hog in the water. I'm sorry. Feral hogs are out of control. And now we've got them in swamps? Are you?
I've never seen a feral hog in the wild, but I can only imagine.
It's just an insanely mean pig that gets, they get like 400 pounds, 5 feet long. Hello?
Well, I know that they're supposed to be like real aggressive, real mean, real big.
It's insane. And like, now we've got them in water? No, thank you.
They're adapting.
I hate it. Oh, I hate this. They're evolving. Too. Oh, I'm putting this picture in.
Put it in.
This does look like something from a horror movie. Oh, yeah.
I'm just waiting.
This is from a game.
I still want to see it.
Okay. I've got them both uploaded.
That thing? That thing is a thing of nightmares. That's a furry alligator.
Yeah.
With more control over its limbs.
Yeah.
What the hell is that?
That is another version of the Honey Island Swamp Monster.
I feel like this version was like, I'm going to make it into what I want it to be.
It's the worst. It's the worst possible image of a mix between a primate and an alligator.
Oh, I hate it.
It's like a scaly, spiky gorilla with an alligator tail and fangs. It's horrible.
Oh, I hate it. I hate it. Okay, I'm moving on. I don't want to look. I'm done. We're done.
Hey, you wanted to see him.
You should have told me no.
No, I'm not going to do that. Why would I do that?
Because I don't know. I don't know. Okay, well, I hate it. I hate everything about it, but that's fine. Thank you all for tuning into Hell on Heels Podcast. If you want to see pictures from today's episode, you can follow us on Instagram, Hell on Heels Podcast, X Hell on Heels Pod, or Facebook by searching Hell on Heels Podcast. You can also find us on Linktree by typing in Hell on Heels Podcast. If you want to support the show, be sure to like, review, rate, share, and subscribe on your favorite listening platform. If you have your own true crime or paranormal stories or just words of encouragement, send them our way at hellonheelspodcast@gmail.com. Thank you again for listening, and don't forget to... I cannot speak. I'm tired. Thanks again for listening, and don't forget to tell your friends to listen with you as well. Bye.
Bye.